Bandwidth and hosting for the British Tech Network is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting. Mm-hmm. Hello, welcome to the big show from the British Tech Network. I'm Ewan Rankin, and we're here to discuss the week's technology with a great panel. As ever, top left, Mr. James Hart, who's been in court by the looks.
No, this is a homage, or homage, as the Americans might say, rhymes with fromage, to the great Will Green. Now, I don't own a dinner suit. No, but his last British Mac show, he was dressed perfectly. He had his dinner jacket on, and he was looking very dapper. And so I thought, this is about the best I could do. So I'm wearing a shirt and tie this evening in honor of... No, he's not dead. Well, not as far as I know. You don't want to find that out on the big show. But in honor of him, because he's such a fine man, I thought I'd dress up for the occasion.
I was only worried because he's supposed to be on the Mac show tomorrow. I'm one short otherwise.
What if he's not? What's happened to him?
If he's not, you also, can do it in memoriam.
So are you a Lord Reith for the evening then, James?
I am. Good evening, listener. And this is also in honour of RIM, because obviously they're a very business-focused company, and I'm sure we'll come on to that, won't we?
Yes, you look like you're dressed ready to talk about Microsoft in the early 90s.
Developers!
He's got to have a short-sleeve shirt for that.
Put a black jacket on, mate, and you could be IBM.
True, it's got the tie and everything, yeah.
Next to him, Dr. Livingston, I presume. David Dean. That would be you, mate. Where the bloody hell have you been? I'm stepping outside. I may be some time. Oh, come on. You've been longer than that. The last time we heard you, your Mac had died.
Oh, the iMac, yes.
Yeah. That's like 1985.
And it was faulty RAM in the end.
Oh.
And crucial.
But you've gone all quiet. Your podcast disappeared for a while as well.
Only for 1 week.
Oh, okay.
No, I've been quite busy.
We're a demanding audience.
No, I went on holiday for a bit, and then I had a week off, and then got back into it again. So
I want to be you. I want to sit and do nothing for a while. That'd be cool. Next to David, we have Sarah. Hello, Mrs.
What's this doing nothing?
Oh, come on.
I've forgotten what
come
it's
on.
Like.
We're not doing a measuring competition.
It'll never catch on.
I'm
grateful for that right now. It's like... my life is crazy at the moment, and
why is it crazy, Sarah?
I just had an awful lot going on, and work is getting crazier and crazier. So,
didn't I hear you got a promotion?
I did. Yeah, so that's why my work is getting crazier and crazier.
Congratulations!
I've got my finger on the pulse and a memory because you told me. And last but by no means least, from sunny Petaluma with two layers, Eric Lanigan.
It's not actually sunny today. It was 90. Now it's back to 60. But what? I don't think I have a dinner jacket or even know what that is. Can someone tell me what is a dinner jacket?
Tuxedo.
Oh, okay.
Tuxedo. Etiquette would suggest, mate, that if you wear a black dinner jacket, you should have a black bow tie and you should have a turned down collar. And if you wear a long tailed jacket, then you should have a winged collar with a white bow tie.
That's called a morning suit.
No. Morning suit's entirely different.
Speaking of long-tailed coats and top hats, did you hear the story about what Steve Jobs wanted to dress up like?
Willy Wonka.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
How appropriate.
I got to say, a more appropriate phrase there couldn't be. According to Sarah Jane, anyway. There we go.
What is the phrase? What?
Oh, we can't say the word on British podcasts that rhymes with Wonka. Oh.
I don't even know what you're referring to.
Yeah, don't say it when you figure it out either.
I thought it was quite funny. That was that tweet I saw yesterday that you sent out, Ewan, about the kid that on those 30 minutes.
Oh, we're going to talk about that. Yes.
And I was quite restrained.
All you have to do is take Wonka and rhyme it with Banker. And you'll get the word, but don't say it, please.
That doesn't rhyme in my accent, though.
Moving on, say it, and I've got a bleak point. The week in tech, the whole week in tech, and nothing but the week in tech. Olympus tried a teaser campaign. They decided to support their new product by sending out walnuts in boxes as a teaser. So if you opened up a box that said "Hi from Olympus," it contained two walnuts. Apparently, people were disappointed to find out it was the new TG1 camera that's supposed to be really tough. They preferred the articles that looked like shriveled camel's testicles. But there you go. That's what Olympus did.
That's what disappointment looks like.
The Department of the Interior has given Google $35 million to do their cloud service and email content thing, and they've awarded them the contract, so that's pretty good. Do bear in mind, however, and this is going back to a story from last year, that the Department of Interior apparently has a lot of screw-ups due to lazy typists. Investigators found that some government workers in the Department of Interior often click through mindlessly when entering contract information into the computer system, so that contract offers were given to people without any analysis of the content. There you go.
Oh, goodness me.
So Google may have it, Google may not have it. A young gentleman of 11 years of age has taken it upon himself to relieve his bladder onto 30 max, causing around 37 grand's worth of damage at a school. I did tweet out on this one, but that's huzzah to the kid, but 37 grand's worth of max gone down. A guy is suing BMW in California, only in California, Eric, for riding his BMW, and apparently riding this BMW with a custom saddle gave him an erection that lasted for 2 years. There you go. And that's the bike. It's a good-looking bike, I grant you, but 2 years? And Microsoft have decided to slap a Union Jack on an Xbox 360 and sell it in time for the Olympics, and they've distressed the flag somewhat. I've got to say, Eric, I've got a question for you, mate. If the Microsoft put a US flag on an Xbox 360 and distressed it to that degree, would you be upset, or would the American people be upset?
I don't think so. I mean, I'm just looking at my shirt even right now has like distressed lettering. I think that's just the style. I've actually seen plenty of distressed American flags on various t-shirts and stuff.
I thought you were going to say distressed game, Americans.
I didn't hear that. What?
I thought you were going to say distressed Americans. The choice November is not going to be big, is it? But I thought that would be quite offensive to most Americans.
And that reminds me, actually, I don't know if you saw The Apprentice a couple of weeks ago, where they had one of the tasks was to set up a kind of upselling crap in a shop. And so basically they bought some stuff from a junk shop, and they had this brilliant idea of painting everything with Union Jacks on. And guess what? Nobody bought it.
Yes. Yeah. Maybe, are you saying I've made a bad choice then?
Are British people offended by that? Because I don't think Americans are offended. I mean, I know what you mean. Americans get very, bent out of shape about things done through the flag, but I don't think just distressed graphic art has done that.
I think it was more about the fact that they painted it on a chair, an old chair.
Yeah.
And I think most, with all due respect, I think a lot of British people would probably see it as a bit like going to London and buying tourist shop of a bear with a Union Jack on it. It's the kind of thing tourists do. You don't do if you're a Brit.
Well, it's also the fact that you have to connect, which is this sort of thing, which is supposed to be kind of, you don't want to get noticed. You also have it in front of your television. You don't want it to, because it's sitting there the whole time. You don't want a bright colored Union Jack on it. It looks awful. It really does.
I'm not going
to buy it. Did you buy one, Ewan?
I did not know. I haven't got a Kinect, actually. We need to get one. But my lounge isn't particularly wide, so I don't think it would work without the shortening lens.
You'd smash stuff.
Yeah. And finally, Facebook has introduced organ donorship on the homepage, so that you can go, you can now donate your organs. Most of the people that I've spoken to would have been happy with a paywall, though. So
I picture that scene in that one Monty Python's The Meaning of Life, where they come to harvest your organs. You're like, I'm not done with them yet.
Well, Zuckerberg has got a lot of people that dislike him, but you've got to say that's a step too far. Privacy is one thing, but taking my kidneys, well, useless anyway, but there you go. So
it's a little bit mawkish, isn't it?
I don't think they're actually, a lot of donors, though. 500 million donors. Right, the week in tech. Shall we start with BlackBerry, because they've released, RIM have released BlackBerry 10 as an operating system, and a brand new phone that tries to go back to looking like the Torch, which is not a good thing because most people hated that. And they come up with a reversing camera so that you can take a picture and you can put the camera in rewind to go back to a point when someone wasn't blinking, which I got to say, I did predict 2 years ago on the Computer America show, and I've repeated it several times since, that this was the big technology that was coming. Have BlackBerry saved the day or jumped the shark? Because I've learned what that phrase means now.
Good, good. Yes, it's happy days, isn't it?
It missed the boat.
Missed the boat.
Jumped the shark and missed the boat, yeah. At the same dock.
Landed on the docks. I mean,
in the sea with the shark.
I mean, we've got a nice picture of Torsten there, looking very young and fresh-faced, like the puppet that he probably is for Lazaridis and Balzilli. But are they really going to do any good with this? Or are people just switched off the brand now?
They're too late.
Mm.
Okay, that's that story done then.
Well, no, I would add that this is the last desperate plea of a company who is fast becoming irrelevant. What are they trying to achieve with this? What they're trying to do is they're trying to take on Samsung, who've just launched the Galaxy 3 in the UK. Apple, who've got some phone or other. And they're years behind. How are they going to get a product? I mean, I saw my first Nokia Lumia 800 for the first time this week. And I was, wow, it's a Nokia Lumia 800. It looks like all the others, okay. But at least someone's got one. Can you imagine BlackBerry actually getting any market share at all?
No.
I think the thing is, BlackBerry have still got a fairly good user base out there, particularly amongst young people. And I think that's going to take some time to change.
Diminishing rapidly, though, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. And it's not got a real keyboard either. I mean, in the press release, it said the keyboard, it's got a virtual keyboard that will stop you from making errors. That's called autocorrect, kids. Incidentally, the reason the guy had a Nokia Lumia 800 was because it was free.
Ah.
On contract for 2 years.
Exactly.
I mean, Eric, what's the feeling in the States over BlackBerry? I mean, is there a barometer that you've got? I mean, my barometer is the rugby club. I go down and I sit and drink with people there, or I go into the cricket club, and I look at the phones that people pull out, and we're probably 60% iPhone. A couple of people are on Nokias that are, you know, not as old as the 3310, but not far off. And then the rest are a few Samsung Galaxy S2s, and there is still sort of 12%, 20% of BlackBerries. I mean, in your peer group, being one of the young and thrusting people of the panel, what's the experience?
It's been all iPhones. I don't know anyone that has a BlackBerry. I think that the problem is, I don't know how BlackBerry is ever going to... I don't know if anyone's going to compete with the iPhone, actually. I think that's the problem. I think Android doesn't know how they're going to do it. I think Microsoft doesn't know how they're going to do it. I think we have a little problem right now in the industry, which is that the only company's products who people are actually caring about are Apple's, and that's going to put Apple they already are in a monopolistic position. But I'm thinking, what does BlackBerry even have to offer that people would consider them competitive with? It's not the App Store. It's not the brand name. It's not that people use them at home and that their kids want them anymore. It's more for a corporate network. And with the consumerization of IT, quote unquote, it seems like that's being pushed out, and people want to bring in their own devices from home now.
How much of the IT market is really gone? I mean, if you look at the corporate IT process, you know, Ian Grant's been on this show saying actually BlackBerrys are very good at that. They're very easy to set up. They're very reliable. They're very secure. People like the keyboards. I mean, I've still never had anything that I can type as fast on than the BlackBerry Curve that I had. But the thing is, they went through a long period of pulling out phones that looked the same, that did the same, that charged for different amounts, that had different brand names across 10 product types, and they lost their identity as to what they were trying to produce. And at the moment, I think going for the Torch again, have they stepped away from actually what is the core of their business, the enterprise market that wants a keyboard because it's all about the emails? It's about when that little red light flashes on the top.
I think, like you said, Ewan, that the keyboard is quite a big thing. And I mean, I've used a BlackBerry, and I did find the keyboard very easy to use. But from a personal experience, I actually found that the Palm Pre, and I'm, you know, I obviously don't use it anymore,
put the keyboard on it was probably one of the best things about it. I like having a physical keyboard. You know, as much as I love my Nexus S, the keyboard drives me to distraction.
I was thinking how it's interesting that people, there really is no competitive marketplace for email clients, for one, like or for with the exception of Microsoft Office and the Google Docs. It's like the core productivity apps are not what is deciding these products anymore. So it's sort of like, what do they even, how do they market themselves? I feel like the reason that people are on iPhones has less to do with the actual software that is provided on them. Being like, I love the Apple Mail client so much better than BlackBerry's or the Instant Messenger. I don't think they're saying that. I think there's something, it's a combination of just graphical prettiness and the fact that it's the hot new thing everyone's talking about, and everyone who's anybody has an iPhone, and so it's the default thing to buy, whereas before the default thing was the BlackBerry.
Yeah, but there is a whole new, you do actually hit on a thing, which is like, if somebody else has got an app, an iPhone, they'll hand it to you and you'll learn, you know, you'll learn the user experience, and an Android phone is quite similar. You know, have the same sort of scrolly thing. If BlackBerry are coming in with what looks like a completely different operating system, they're not going to be able to take hold on that because people aren't going to know what apps to use. Is Google Maps going to be on BlackBerry? I very much doubt it.
There's only one market where BlackBerry seems to be growing, and that's in Africa, because they offer a phone with BBM for about, I don't know, £8 a month, unlimited.
With encryption,
yeah.
So if you're a drug dealer,
well, it's a cheap way to get data on a phone in Africa because it's expensive. Otherwise, an iPhone down there costs you about what, 50, 60 quid a month. So for a BlackBerry phone for 8 or 9 with unlimited texting ability for free, it works.
I mean, they're discussing this phone as being the first BlackBerry that's a true internet phone. I'm struggling to try to understand what that true internet is about, because it doesn't seem, you know, you've always had browsing, not particularly brilliant, admittedly, because of the size of the screens and stuff, but they had a browsing experience which was better with the Torch in terms of visually, but I don't understand why this is a true internet phone as opposed to anything they've done in the past.
What size screen is it, do we know?
Well, it looks like what he was holding up to be about the same sort of 4-inch.
Yeah, it's iPhone-y.
Everything else.
It seems to be the age of the 4.7, 4.8, doesn't it?
Again, it's a small screen.
They're behind.
Absolutely. Never mind. Well, we finished that story. Have you done enough kicking there, James? That's what you wanted.
I'm all depressed now. I do hope so. Let's do something upbeat.
Let's do peeing on Macs.
You're taking the...
Oh, BMW giving you erections. No. Twitter has predicted that Boris Johnson is going to win the London mayoral election, which means absolutely nothing to Eric, and nor should it. And it doesn't really mean a great deal to me either, and I only live 100 miles away. For those of you that are watching the video, Ken Livingstone's the one that's in black and white on that colour picture.
I voted in that election about a couple of hours ago.
Oh, really? Who did you vote for?
I'm not saying, obviously.
Yeah, keep a secret and then it won't come true. How good's Twitter at predicting mayoral outcomes? Because it was an interesting thing today. There was an article in The Telegraph talking about Twitter predicting Boris Johnson winning. And then on Technology Review, that was published by MIT, there's a study into the fact that says that Twitter's really crap at predicting election outcomes.
So, to be fair, are exit polls?
I don't know.
Yeah, that's been proven, yeah.
Well, people lie on the way out, you think?
Well, people talk crap on Twitter.
I don't know. I mean, if you think back to the general election 2 years ago, the BBC actually got it absolutely spot on with their exit poll.
Well, there was old Robert, with the swingometer, wasn't it? And he predicted stuff. He did sophology and predicted the outcome
of Jon Snow.
No. The swingometer goes back to a guy called Robert, someone who was Canadian, I think, by origin.
Yeah, I can't remember his name.
And he invented the swingometer, but it was basically sophology. It was basically I mean, they've done sophology since the Roman period of asking people who they voted for when they emerged.
I think they should ditch the swingometer and have a clapometer instead.
Come out and give a round of applause to the person you voted for.
Exactly.
There's only one of you, though. It's just you can have sore hands. That's not going to work.
That's interesting that you say you're Sorry, it's interesting that you say your exit polls are not very accurate. I think ours are, but probably because we only have two parties.
Yeah, I mean, yours is a 50-50 race, where, you know, which the first past the post is fine. You won't get 100% of the electorate turnout, but what you'll get is a majority of the voters who actually turn out will vote for one or the other. Whereas, because we've got three parties, we end up with a hung parliament, as we've done this time, in a coalition. So it is different. But, I mean, how good is Twitter as a social barometer then? That's the real question.
I don't even think it represents people who have even voted, because people who have something to say go on Twitter. People who have something to say tend to vote. People who really can't be asked don't go on Twitter and don't vote.
So that's a good point. If it's a tool of advocacy, or if the people who have the most to say the most, then it could end up skewing the results.
Because a turnout in the London election is going to be, 25-30%?
Especially as the weather's been pretty rubbish today as well.
Mm.
I didn't even know it was today.
What with it being news and all that?
Yeah. Go on, Eric, sorry.
Sorry, I keep dropping off. I don't. Every time I start to talk, then I don't hear what you say because it cuts out your audio, so I apologize. Right. But this is a big gold mine, this mining Twitter, mining the public data on Twitter, on Facebook, anywhere, for useful data. There's a lot of companies who are trying to do this. Maybe not a lot, but a few high-profile ones. They sort of have their, if you're in marketing, or if you're in a big company, if you got a product to promote, email us and we'll send you a quote, that kind of thing. So I think it's a big business. But I suspect it's still in the snake oil stage. I suspect that if people have really cracked the code of how to use Twitter to predict outcomes of things, how to predict national or global opinions or something, I suspect you'd see a lot more success stories, a lot more people doing, you know, like the way ad agencies do case studies when they were successful on something. It's intriguing. I think what would you call it? Not artificial intelligence, but the aggregating, the meta analysis of things, mm-hmm. that this ever-increasing flow of public data that we have, I think that's going to be important. I hope that does yield some insights, but if it's just 140 characters and half of it's sarcasm and half of it's, meaningless hashtags, I don't know. It may never happen.
Anyone else? I can't see that Twitter really is. People are talking in the chat room about during the Egyptian uprising.
Yeah, it works.
It was
well.
Interesting with that, but you didn't know who was really there, who was actually giving eyewitness accounts, and who was talking utter crap.
Yeah, but the thing about it was enabling people to get information out when it was somewhat difficult to do that. We've seen that in other environments as well, where it's been challenging.
Well, half of the information that was coming out of Egypt, and the other half was coming out of their backsides. That's the trouble.
And imagine what would happen if people start to think that they do have accurate predictions. And then, they've said that this happens with exit polling, actually. Didn't this happen in the year 2000 here? That they started to give their results in the East Coast. So by the time the polls closed in the West Coast, it had actually convinced people not to actually go to the polls because they thought it's already been decided. So we know that how people game Amazon ratings and Yelp ratings and things. So if there ever came a time when the public opinion poll that is Twitter became a useful predictor of something important, then you might have all these scam artists come out of the woodwork to make fake Twitter accounts and be posting just tons and tons of fake Twitter spam to try to throw those results and discourage people from doing whatever it is they're trying to measure.
I mean, there's an awful element there's a good point in the chat room here from Paul. He's not actually watching the live feed. He's just in the chat room trying to make it more exciting, unquote. I'm not sure whether I'm insulted by that or not. But Paul's saying there's a guy at work who's in charge of their team who's called he's in charge of social media strategy within his workplace. And today in a meeting, he called it Twitter. And there's a point in that, you know, our corporate elements that are affecting Twitter purely attempting to affect it for their own ends. So there again, you know, you see a person called John Smith tweeting out, but John Smith's actually a corporately controlled Twitter account where they've just picked something to get a message out, you know, to go viral, to try and push a product.
Even more than that, you get these customer service, these, BT Cares and stuff like that. Luton Airport, I know, for example, employed a separate company to do their Twitter account for them.
Yeah.
And so anything that's you say to them about Luton Airport, it's nothing to do with Luton Airport. They're nowhere near it.
But there are companies that use it quite well, though, aren't there? I mean, Three Mobile have got a couple of people that run a Twitter account all day for them, and they answer queries on Twitter. and do quite a good job of it when I've looked at it.
I think it's one of those things that it depends how companies and organizations use it. If they're genuine and they use it, as David said, to, you know, actually answer people's questions and stuff like that, then people will actually respond and use it. But if people are just using it to promote stuff and it's very obviously not the person that's supposed to be doing it, it's being done by a third party or a PR agency, then I think people are going to quickly lose interest in that because it's just another corporate way of getting information out there.
I want to have an entire overseas call center operating my Twitter account.
In Indian.
Yes, just seas and seas of people. And people at computers just coming up with things.
Dude, give me the password. I'd do a far better job. you will be the American Antichrist within a week.
Don't forget, you've got to talk about EastEnders as well.
And cricket.
And what cricket. Doing, yeah. We haven't explained cricket to Eric yet.
Oh, God, no.
Was it going to be so long before they get any, you know, one of these artificial intelligences to do Twitter? Wouldn't that be awful? Where it actually tries to hold a conversation with you? Well, one step beyond the bot.
Well, that's the Turing kind of test, these isn't ones it?
That, yeah, exactly.
Keep up, James.
Skynet. Sorry?
you wouldn't be able to keep up.
Well, I know. Well, I do tweet a lot, but that's hardly the point.
But you were saying about artificial intelligence and tweeting, James.
Yes, I was. No, you can put. I don't. I can't remember. I've completely lost track. No, I was saying that the artificial intelligence. You could end up having tweet responses for somebody who you think is a real person, but actually is just like an automata who's programmed to answer questions in a conversational way. Have you ever been to these sites, by the way, where you click the speak to a live person thing and you end up with a chat window? Mm. And you, is that a real person? Is that really somebody's desk and it pops up and you can say whatever you like to?
I actually used two on two different organizations in one evening a couple of months ago. And in both cases, I'm not going to say who the companies are, even though I had good experiences. I actually found them very, very helpful.
I think there's two levels of that kind of stuff. I mean, I've used, I'll big Adobe up here because I've got Photoshop on a couple of computers. And when my hard drive crashed the other week, I got my 30 days of it. And then it said, oh, no, this has already been used. You're going to have to use a new key. And I went on their Adobe's online help system and I spoke to a lad named Kareem, who I got no doubt was real because he joked with me as we were talking. And instantly, they had, he said, right, I've reset it. Try it again now. Yep, there you go. It's working. Great. Thanks very much. And it was live interaction with live updates for him as to whether it was working or it wasn't working. And he stayed on with me until it worked perfectly. And it was great. Mm. Really, really good. And then IKEA's is awful. It's an automated system. But it doesn't say it's not. It's got a picture of an automated looking cartoon and it's not portrayed as being a real person. So it's how they set themselves up, maybe.
Yes.
You know, I think those chat rooms are actually a very economical way to do tech support. As I was thinking about it as you were saying it, if you imagine how on the phone, how long it takes between each step to have the tech support person say, okay, now restart your computer. And it's like 5 minutes later, they're like, okay, it's up now. You're like, okay, next step. Now restart it again. And it's like 10 more minutes. But imagine if you have five or six windows open, that person could just be typing a mile a minute, helping 30 different people at once. And no one would even be complaining about their accent.
I'm sure that's very much true. That's how it works, Eric. Quite sure that's the case, but also there's plenty of organizations that are using it for pre-sale support as well. I was using the Dell site a little while ago and, you know, this window popped up and said, can I help you with your inquiry? And I didn't actually use it on that occasion. And I thought, yeah, okay, if I'm looking for a particular thing, that could actually be really useful.
That's because that's someone sliding up to you in a shop, isn't it? Can I help you, sir?
Yeah, but that doesn't feel quite as intrusive. It's quite weird, really.
I called Apple recently. I forget why. It's been a few months now. But I think that their telephone support is now powered by Siri. And I'm wondering if you guys have called there recently, if they have this in the UK.
Lord in heaven.
I take it the answer is no.
Not that we're aware, no.
No, you call Apple here and they say, and a man's voice answers and says, hi, I'm an automated system who can understand complete sentences. Please state the nature of your call or something like that. And you tell them, and it's shockingly accurate. But the funny thing is, between each sentence that you say, you hear like the clickety clack of like an old fashioned keyboard. There's no one typing. He's a robotic voice. I don't even know what the delay is for.
American Express use that.
Gosh.
Alex Fox in the chat room says he still can't stand the paperclip that's in Microsoft Word.
How clicky!
That is the one thing you want to straighten out straight away. I mean, you want to get that paperclip and just bend it into a toothpick.
Yeah, it's called Clippy.
You appear to be doing a podcast. Would you like some help with that?
No, none that you can provide. Apparently, he's got a name, says Paul. Good grief.
I haven't used that for a long time, but normally if I'm using that, I change it to the dog because he's a lot cuter.
Well, Clippy's not in Office 2011. You must be using Office 2006 or something.
That's what I'm saying. I haven't used it for a long time, but when I did used to use it, I also used to change it to the dog because he was a lot more fun.
There's got to be a hack for one of those Apple products, Apple TV or the iPhone or something, where you can turn the Siri assistant, change that to Clippy.
No, there was one that came out that was a woman that wasn't wearing much. That was a hack for it.
Oh, what?
I remember getting a piece of spam for it. It was a girl who helped you with your Word documents, helped you straighten a few things out. Mostly Clippy. There you go.
No, all they've got is all that's left now is the ribbon.
Don't tell me it's a female Clippy.
How would you get boobs on a paperclip?
I don't even want to think about the name you'd give her.
Moving on. Mozilla are looking to unify the mobile and desktop experience. The new Firefox, allegedly, they've taken all of the devs that are working... They had two separate dev departments. One was working on mobile, one was working on desktop. And they've just rammed them together. Now, I don't know if this is just a cost efficiency thing that's then gone ballistic and they thought, well, actually, this might work. Or whether this truly is the fact that they think that people want a unified experience.
Yeah, of course they do.
Do they?
If it works, I will love it forever. Yeah. I get so frustrated with my mobile browser. You just turn the screen and it just goes, I'm going to completely ruin your screen, and just puts everything everywhere. If Firefox can be made to look on my mobile phone as it does on the desktop, I'll have it.
I've got Ice Cream Sandwich on Android. I use Chrome.
I'm going to download that now.
And I must say, that is one of the things. It took me a while to get used to it, and it is different, but I would much prefer it if it was possible to make it the same. It would make it a lot easier to learn how to use it.
I just don't, you know, there's a screen environment here that's the issue. I can't, my iPhone already goes to websites and shows me the full website, and it's just near on impossible to try and navigate unless you know where you're going. You certainly can't browse and digest content like news and that kind of thing on the iPhone. You can do it on the iPad, I'll grant you, because it's just that little bit bigger and a little bit clearer, even on iPad 1 compared to iPad 2 and 3. But... It's just on the iPhone. It's horrific. I don't think it's any better. Probably on an inch bigger on the S2.
That's what you want a Galaxy Note for, I think.
There's the appeal, perhaps, in this. But unifying your Explorer, your browser, the way forward. Because I would prefer a functional mobile application.
But that's scary, isn't it? You leave your computer screen, you're immediately glued to your mobile screen, then you sit back down again, you're back on your computer screen, it's done exactly the same. Oh, that's frightening, because you're never away from a browser.
Oh, we're not talking about just syncing. No, we're syncing.
The look is it probably would. It's just like your Kindle, where you have a Kindle app and it turns to the right page as soon as you do something. I imagine if you click the pass me from my mobile to my browser click, I'm sure they do that. Or maybe not.
You'd have all your porn everywhere all the time.
Yeah, you have to tidy up after yourself constantly.
The wife sits at home and realises what you're reading on the long journey to work each morning, James. It's not just about syncing in bookmarks and open tabs and that kind of stuff. It's about a visual experience. A browser's a visual experience, no? It's about what you look and see. And if you've got text, I can't see that things like iPhone and cell phones have got a good enough visual experience to unify a browsing process. They've got to look different.
Yeah, not to mention that even if you unify the browser, you haven't unified the web pages, which of course have to render differently for a little vertically oriented 320 by 240 display on the smallest of the phones, going up to, you know, a massive, 4K display.
It's all about Zoom and scale
and having your phone on its side.
Yeah.
I'm just playing with the Bagel Tech site on my Android phone.
I don't know if you get Chrome for it. I'm so excited.
Would it be possible to come up with standards that would say sort of just general interface guidelines that people would follow, where it's like when you move from a small touchscreen device to a large mouse and keyboard device, that certain things you expect to be different, or you expect to be in a different place? Because I'm thinking how the dumbing down, the oversimplification that is necessary to get things to such a small screen and to get finger targets that are pushable by a finger instead of a little mouse pointer that's one pixel wide. Obvious concessions have to be made. And I think that we might be harming the desktop experience if we oversimplify it too much, or pretend like Apple even did, that the refresh button should be way over on the other side, which obviously makes a big difference to a mouse user, makes no difference to a finger touch user on an iPhone. So what do you think? Could we ever have a set of things that we know change from phone to big screen?
I don't see that. I mean, that's the key argument of this, is that they're talking about the browsing experience is consistent. I mean, I've got a picture here that's off the press release, and they're saying effectively, you know, the top version here is the desktop experience, and then you've got the iPhone and the iPad experience, or pad and phone experience, that looks extremely similar. And I'm fine with that idea of consistency of appearance, but in terms of rendering the page and making it functional, usable, you cannot tell me that those three are synchronous. There is no way on God's green earth that your cell phone on the left is going to be as viewable, as usable, as searchable, as touchable as the one on the right. And I know that that's the browser, that's the content provider's issue, in that we don't provide a mobile type website. But just say you're using unifying controls, I can't see that improving the browser experience.
But I'll tell you what, they would be the first full, if they did it, they'd be the first full browser for iPhone or for iOS, because there isn't a browser for iOS here, is there?
Yeah, but Opera Mini. Opera Mini is fantastic.
Isn't a real browser, though, is it?
Well, I look at web pages on it, if that's the qualification. But
Skyfire is a pre-rendered browser, so that's a thin one, isn't it? There isn't a proper, apart from Safari, which you get with your iOS device, you haven't got a fully-fledged browser for it. And I don't think Firefox are ever going to do it, are they?
Well, Opera does partial rendering, doesn't it? So it gets a little bit of the image down, and then it stops. It's a predefined process.
So that's not going to really look like your green desktop browser, is it? That's the point. The point I'm trying to make is there isn't one that looks like your desktop browser on your iPhone yet anyway, or on your iPad. Everything is a kind of an emulation or a soft version which does pre-rendering and delivers you at a file. Is this what Firefox is promising? Something which actually is a proper browser?
Mm. They're saying it's going to be a browser that's consistent across all platforms.
Not sure
the browsing experience will be consistent across all platforms.
Mm. So. Well,
I mean, Winrider in the chat room is saying Opera Mini Browser is a good experience, and I agree with that. It's very good, and it's very fast as well, because it's only partially rendering image files. So we shall see.
Wow.
The mobile world phone market shares were released this week from Q1 in 2011 to Q1 2012, and it shows the changes between them all. And most of them are coming back. However, the iPhone is going up and the Samsung is going up. BlackBerry doesn't even figure on its own anymore. It's been lumped in with all the others, and all the others are on decline as well. As, I mean, this comes back to the point you made earlier on, Eric, that, you know, no one knows who's actually going to compete with the iPhone, but in a market shift of 17% to 23% year on year, that is a bigger proportional rise than Apple's by a long way for Samsung. Are they getting it right?
Well, they may get it right enough that the people at the mobile phone store can push it on the customer. The customer says, "Oh, that's cheaper. I'll take that." And then of the Android handsets, didn't Samsung make the most recent flagship device? I think they've had some very big flagship devices. So of the Android handsets, they're making arguably the best. I think that's true. And then I think people are just choosing that by default, though. I think still when you see those numbers of people adopting Android at much faster rates than the iPhone now, I don't think they're really doing that on a feature by feature comparison, saying I prefer this ideologically over Apple's product.
I mean, Sarah, you've bought Galaxy, not Galaxy, the
Nexus S.
Nexus S. You've gone for you made an informed choice to go for Android.
Yeah.
Is there anything that Samsung's doing that makes you twitch to go away? Because don't forget, of course, you're Android now, so you've got that ability.
Yeah,
to move
I mean,
away.
Also, I bought this phone 15 months ago now, and I'm still as happy as I was when I bought it, which for me says I definitely made the right decision. The only phone out there that I'd actually rather have is another Samsung, which is the Galaxy Note, and that's purely because of the screen size, not because of any other reason.
But that's a handbag phone.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't mean that disrespectfully. That is a phone for an inside top pocket or that's remotely answered or a handbag phone.
But are you saying it's got a really big screen?
Yeah. The only reason that I would want that is for the same reason that I was saying earlier. It's about the keyboard. Is having a bigger screen means, one, you can read it easier, but I can read on with Zoom and stuff like that on there anyway. It's actually being able to have a bigger keyboard.
David, you've used Galaxy S2, haven't you? You were quite impressed with that.
Yeah, very impressed. And I'm very impressed by what I've seen of the Galaxy S3 and of the new HTC phones, the One S and the One X.
You've equally had an iPhone, haven't you? So
My iPhone is my main phone still. But I do hanker after a good Android phone. I've even been looking at Dell Streaks this week off eBay for 100 quid just to play with one, because that's like the pre-Galaxy Note. It's the same sort of thing, but slower, I think. I think Samsung are getting it right. If you look at the feature phone and the smartphone splits on market share, you can see that Samsung are pretty consistent in their market share, which is obviously on the back of all the Android phones they're doing. And actually, RIM does appear on their own on that chart, if you go to the second chart on that page, because they are obviously smartphones. I think the quality of phones is just getting better and better. And if you read the reports about the S3 today, they've really done some work with their TouchWiz and the ice cream sandwich operating system as well, and made them a bit more, I don't know, compatible, I think. Because TouchWiz was a bit of a mess on the S2. And I think HTC have done that with their Sense as well. They've made them a bit more user-friendly and almost more transparent, I think, as well.
That reminds me, going back to what we started the show with about the iPhones, why people are so into the iPhone as opposed to BlackBerry or others. I think they love being able to ask their friends and family, the immediate people around them, hey, how do you do this or that? What is your favorite app? Can you show me how this or that works? Yeah. Instant tech support from friends and family and coworkers. You can take it to a Genius Bar. You can get hands-on support from the actual people from the company. That level of tech support is unparalleled. I think back in the days when the Mac was still like a little single digit minority product, a lot of people were afraid to jump over to a Mac because they would rather have the network of instant tech support, especially in the office place, that comes from having a Windows PC, or that comes from having the most popular thing. So I think, speaking of TouchWiz, I think those companies like Samsung, HTC, the people who thought they could sell their own unique smartphone platform by making their own interface on top of Android, their own skin, I think are finding that that's a bad investment. People don't like having to wait for that. They prefer the genuine features from Google. And so those phone manufacturers are having a hard time saying, well, how do we compete with Apple if it's a game of software competition and we just pass along the software that we get from Google?
I think the other thing as well is that what you're talking about there is almost an evangelistic methodology of support and sales environment, whereas Sarah's bought her Nexus S through an evangelical experience in the sense that she desired it and went for it and took it. But there is no support structure for Sarah if she doesn't want it. She's got to go to a community out there, but the community is remote, whereas as what you're saying there is the evangelists are hunkered around you. They're definitely accessible.
Yeah, I mean, Sarah obviously has no problem searching for what she needs on the internet, because she's an expert for that. But for most people, if you told them that the only support they could have was a forum or a live chat window with someone who might be a robot, I think they'd say, forget that. I'll take the Genius Bar with the helpful, friendly people in the neighborhood.
Mm. And the crazy thing is with an Android phone, you may have two different HTCs. And they both do different things. They've got different feature sets. So if one person's trying to do one thing, and so, how did you do that? Oh, I haven't got that one on my phone. Different versions of Android, different versions of Sense. And yeah, go on.
No, I was just going to say that is exactly why I went for the Nexus S, because it was untainted by any mobile provider, which causes all sorts of issues with upgrades and all sorts of other things. But so, I know I'm you know, that was a large part of the appeal, but I know that I'm obviously, because I'm a geek, that's, you know, not everyone's going to feel the same way about it and know that.
And also you like a challenge. Geeks love a challenge. They love a project. We love to figure stuff out.
David, by its nature, it's unusual to get a stock Android phone, isn't it?
Yeah, and I had to buy it off contract to do that as well.
Mm.
But I was prepared to do it because I knew it was untainted. It was exactly how Google wanted. So that's why I was able to get ice cream sandwich at Christmas time, because, you know, there was no reason why it couldn't have been straightforwardly upgraded. If I was putting Windows on, you know, upgrading Windows on a PC I'd bought with Windows on it.
I mean, I'll never buy a phone on contract again. There's no question. I'll always buy just SIM free. I mean, Sharon said she wanted a new phone. Hers was getting old and slow. She got the 3. I updated the OS and it just made it impossible to use almost. A lot of the features weren't there. So I said, look, stuff it. Let you have my old 4 and I'll go and get a 4S. But when I went to get the 4S, you know, 3 were offering me great deals, £50 down now and £50 a month for an unlimited contract, etc. with data. And I just said, no, it's okay. I'm going to go over the road. I'm going to pay $699. I'm going to get a 64 gig. Then I'll come back and get a SIM off you.
This is the other thing. When I bought this phone, I thought, right, okay, Sarah, you've got this phone for 2 years. And, you know, okay, I'm paying for it up front. But it means I can go and get a contract that's a lot cheaper than if it's tied to the phone that the mobile provider decided to give me.
That's interesting, because we don't have that in the States, to be sure. Even when you buy a phone out of contract, they really give you no discount on that monthly fee.
Really?
Yeah, which makes, I mean, of course it makes no sense, right? Because the whole point is that you're paying back the $200, $300, $400 subsidy of the phone that you bought. But no, the way that they've structured it here, they don't give you any kind of a break if you buy that phone for $700 up front.
You're spoilt for choice over here with SIM-only contracts, aren't you? You've got, what, GIFGAF and all the
test
networks.
This is the thing, David. It actually means that you can make it cost effective if you're prepared to pay for the phone off contract up front, but you've got that flexibility. When I go over to Ireland, I take the SIM out, put my phone, my SIM in on the plane when I'm on my way over to Ireland. So I've got my Irish mobile and there's no issues. And I knew there wasn't going to be any issues. And I, you know, I love the fact that I can do that.
Sarah loves Bigora.com. There we go.
Well, there are certain websites where you can buy a contract phone and every single phone they send out to you is unlocked anyway. So Carphone Warehouse's sites, E2Save, I think, and I can't think of the other one now. Every phone they sell you on a contract is unlocked and not branded either, which is quite nice.
That's progressive. That's really good. That's
for years, if you look in the right, I think they just buy them in bulk and then just send you a SIM card, whatever network you choose.
If you wait for the bit of kit to come off the boil, you know, a couple of months after it's released, you can go on Amazon or somewhere like that. Get it for a really reasonable price as well. SIM-free, so you can put your like on it. People do get caught up in the hype, don't they? And I think many of the telephone companies and the dealers capitalize on the fact that if a new phone comes out, you start off only being able to get it on contract for a certain amount of time, pounds for a month, plus a premium for actually getting it earlier. Where over the life of the phone, you can spend best part of sort of £900 on it.
But aren't I right, Eric, that Google are now selling the Nexus for $399, SIM-free?
Bargain.
Which is unusual for the States.
Yeah, it's a big... it amounts to a big price drop.
But if what Eric's saying is true, where would you get the SIM from to actually compensate
There's no
for
advantage.
That?
Which, yeah, you have only got 2 suppliers to get it from.
Right.
Need competition, mate.
We're very lucky here, actually. We're very, very lucky.
Extremely. We've got a little quip in the chat room, a question in the chat room about how many would you prefer to be off contract. Winrider said he doesn't want to be on contract ever. James, you said you've got a contract phone, but you're on pay.
No, I haven't got a contract. I'm on page to go, yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting, Windrider spent $800 for the 16-gig iPhone 4S.
Yeah.
That's a lot of outlay for one phone immediately, isn't it?
It's Australian dollars, so that's actually about one third of that, I think, in terms of UK pounds. Street Machine, prefer to avoid contracts if I could. Paul W., I've got a SIM. It's only for me, my wife and my daughter. I just buy the handsets outright. Jenks is saying contracts are raw evil. There's a title. And James, you're a green. So's the fact
that a lot of contracts these days, they're 24 months ago, aren't they? It's ridiculous.
Actually, let's be honest. It's not the contracts that are raw evil. It's the fact that the mobile phone providers lock the bloody phones. Excuse my language.
Most definitely.
You have to spend a tenner down a little shop the other side of town to get it unlocked. If at all.
Although, to be fair, O2 will unlock your iPhone free of charge after 12 months.
No, that's good.
Yeah, after 12 months.
They're required to at the period of the contract, aren't they? The Ofcom have told them that they can't refuse.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, no.
You just fill a little web form in on their site and they do it for you remotely.
I did that with my with the Palm Pre a few months ago because I wanted to use it for something else. And they did it with no quibbles.
Yeah, if you request it, they have to do it, providing you're out of contract. If you're in contract, then they don't, absolutely.
So we've all learned something here tonight.
Well,
unless you're in Sweden, I think, because Robert's there, isn't he?
Well, he's getting humped by IKEA because they sell him crap, and also no customer services, and he's got, when he rings up to complain, the people that he's ringing up the phone with are equally humping him. There we go, bad luck.
Alex said in the chat room that O2 only lock iPhones. They actually lock the Palm Pre when that came out.
They lock a lot more phones than that. Depends where you buy it from.
Yeah, no, as far as I'm aware, I think O2 lock the iPhone for sure. You have to get it unlocked by them.
But Vodafone are the worst, aren't they? They just cover everything with logos.
Yeah, exactly. You can't get it anyway. So
you can't get rid of it. No,
and it's also the crap that they put on the phone, the software, which obviously, particularly with Android, as I was saying, is actually ruins the upgrade path.
Yeah, nowhere, none of the time. That's what we need. This podcast and all the others are brought to you by the fantastic and super dandy UK2.net. I've had a meeting with them this week. We love them and they love us, apparently. So we had a big hug in and then we started drinking and then I don't remember anymore. I didn't feel well yesterday. We've got a ton of stuff going on with them at the moment. There's tons of offer codes for getting reductions. I'm going to get a JPEG made tomorrow and we'll get them up on the website, I promise for you. But they support us. They have got a long-term arrangement with us now. For 3 years they've been supporting. And as far as they're concerned, they see a definite return on investment because you guys are buying their services, and thank you so much. New logo now. We've got rid of the bagel finally. The last bagel has disappeared. Someone pointed that out in a tweet. Thank you very much. And we're now powered by UK2 as the British Tech Network, and we're going to get a bit stronger. We're going to start blogging for them. They're going to organise a great, great competition coming up. If you're an F1 fan, listen carefully to British Tech podcast because there's going to be a competition to go round the Marussia factory. A select few people can enter the competition. This is Willy Wonka and the golden ticket, boys and girls.
What's a Marussia?
You needn't enter then, James. but if you know who Marussia are, then they've done 110 laps today at Mugello, and you can enter the competition. There is a possibility of a guided tour around the Marussia factory. I have already got a golden ticket.
And I want the next one.
But I'm doing interviews and stuff, serious journalist stuff. Yeah.
I'm going to be Ewan's assistant for the day.
UK2.net, please support them. They support us. We've got fantastic deals at the moment. And also, we're going to be bringing you a few more of the services that they're going to put online because they've got a load of stuff in the wings that they're waiting to explode with. And we love them to bits. They love us to bits. We drank lots. We've had dinner. Once you've broken bed and drunk beer, mate, that's it. Brothers for life. No question. Craig, you're in trouble. Thank you for your support, mate. Do appreciate it. Right. I'm expecting a fine and dandy and exciting round of cool things. James, would you like to kick us off?
Well, I would like to kick it off, actually. Was it last week Mr. John Hume was on?
It was.
It was. Lovely chap. I was bemoaning the fact that Tweetcaster was mullering my Galaxy S. I think what happens is because I get so many tweets over the course of a day, it just gets slower and slower. And it says, would you like to wait for Tweetcaster to display? I thought, I've had enough of this. Anybody got a suggestion for a Twitter client? And he said, there's a bunch of students who've written one called Boyd, B-O-I-D. It's still in alpha and I want to support it because it's new. It's designed for ice cream sandwich. and I want to help develop it. I mean, it's still really in its earliest stage. Yes, it displays tweets. You can send direct messages. It hasn't got background notifications yet, but I'm sure they're working on it. And it's part. I love to be at this early stage of the development for people who are actually just getting into it. And what I really want to do is get them involved with Carl and having a chat on the app chat.
Oh,
because
yes,
that would be a really good way of sort of bringing publicity to them. So it's called Boyd, BOIDAPP.com. And I really like it, and it's quick and it works for me. I just have to pop on, and actually the fact it doesn't have background notifications means I get more work done.
I must say, as I've been looking for a Twitter client, really good Twitter client for Ice Cream Sandwich, I will go grab that.
What I would say, Sarah, if you're going to grab it, be prepared, because it is still in alpha. Click the report. You'll have to click the report button a bit, because it has crashed on me a few times. But
okay,
that's the way it gets developed. And I really absolutely applaud them. And it's free.
Excellent. We like
fantastic.
Free. We absolutely like free. No question. Damn.
Are you going to go, thank you very much, moving on?
No. That's good pick, mate. we like free a great deal, so... good picks, mate. And the thing is, as well, you've got to always keep an eye out for Twitter clients, because some bugger comes along and buys one up, and lo and behold, all of a sudden, your Twitter experience suddenly just turns into a bag of hurt. I mean, you look at TweetDeck.
Mm.
I mean, what they've done with TweetDeck is
shocking.
It should be imprisonable.
I don't want to sort of delay things or anything too quickly, but did you see the rumour that sort of got quickly scotched that there was going to be a pro version of Twitter that was being considered, and then they said, no, we're not considering it, we're saying we might consider it, and everybody sort of, there was a bit of a turmoil about that. So, they were saying that if there were a premium app, we'd offer this and offer this and offer this, which is kind of like, immediately people jump on that and go, what do you mean if there was a Twitter app? So, pro app. So, yes. Who knows? Because, of course, it was in response to the Facebook IPO, and they're going, well, Twitter, when are you going to do it? When are you going to actually start making some money? And, of course, the response to that was, well, if we were to make people pay for it, we'd be able to make money. So there may be something. Yeah. I wonder if the face of Twitter will change in the next little while, because a denial often is the same thing as a confirmation, isn't it?
Mm. Windrider has come back to us and said $800 is £507. So it's
I paid $599 for mine.
Ooh. You know what I think? I think I just figured out what should be Twitter's business model. They should take after the cell phone companies and charge you for character overages. So you get 140 characters free, and then every letter after that, they charge you a couple of dollars.
Now there's a plan.
Well, they've stopped the extended tweets, haven't they? You don't get those anymore, because TweetDeck used to do extended tweets, so you could put in 160 characters and it would say read more at the end, didn't it? And there's a lot of people hated that. But
well, I've still seen those around, but I guess maybe they stopped it. Maybe they banned that from applications that use their API.
Mm. Yeah, maybe only theirs will do it or something. Right? Who knows? If anyone knows,
from specialized sites. Yeah,
put it in the chat room. There's a good chat. Excellent. David, what have you got for us?
Yeah, so mine isn't free, but it saved me a shed load of money when I was on holiday a couple of weeks ago. I went to Rome. Internet access in the hotel was going to cost me $27 a day per device.
Ouch.
Obviously, if you go to the airport, you have to pay for that by the minute as well. So I found a service. It's a massive, massive service, very, very popular, called Boingo. There's an app for iPhone, iPad, Android, and you pay $7.95 a month for two devices. And that's all it cost me for the entire holiday for the iPad and the iPhone for unlimited Wi-Fi. Absolute bargain. Works really quickly.
Where does it link to?
They've got their own hotspots, and they also piggyback on the back of Swisscom, BT Open World. I think they're even going on, you know, the airline Wi-Fi service. Is it Go? In the States, and on the train, they're going to hook up with the train people as well. And Excellent. It's a fixed fee, $7.95 a month for two devices, and it is pretty fast.
Brilliant.
Works a treat. Saved a fortune. I was looking forward to my €300 bill for my Wi-Fi, but paid $8 in the end. And
it's always worth researching your options, isn't it, when you go abroad? Roaming is the least cost-effective way to travel.
Although there is supposed to be improvement in that soon.
I was going to buy a SIM card in Italy and all that, but it was just so complicated because they've got to have your passport with you and buy a SIM card, then put the APN settings in. You've got to wait a day for them to take effect. Discovered this little service, and it was brilliant, and still using it now.
Brilliant.
Mm. That's how good it is.
Excellent.
Hey, why don't they sell SIM cards in vending machine, in airport vending machines? Like they sell actual
phones? They do in the UK.
Mm-hmm. I've seen in airports, particularly airside, I think it was in the States. I can't remember whether it was in the States or the UK. I remember during my trip last year to the States that I saw this kind of thing, and it was in sort of like, you know, places where you'd buy, you know, bits of luggage and that sort of thing.
And the like,
where where you could buy this sort of thing. It was quite expensive, but
you could buy a pay-as-you-go phone in a vending machine in Luton Airport.
On the
oh really? Oh okay.
Bloody stupid money, but and they're, you know, like a 3310 style phone. But if you get a SIM, yeah, out, you quid's in, aren't you?
On the plane, they had SIM cards in the bike magazine.
No, really?
Yeah. Libra, I think they were. Only for calls, not for data, but free SIM cards in the in-flight magazine.
You're kidding.
No.
A good idea.
Mm.
Anyone else hear that? I think someone's climbing up on my roof. Right? Someone,
really?
Someone, some kind of work is going on up there.
It's a cat on a hot tin roof.
But no, that's cool. Sorry, I forgot what we were talking about.
Someone's saying in the chat room that there's still a BagelTech logo under this chat saying off air.
There is.
Oh, it says BagelTech News. It's not a logo, though. Is that on the... That's Mixlr.
Yes.
Yeah, that's the Mixlr account. We'll get rid of that. Mixlr can go. We haven't used it. All it does is cause problems and echoes. Moving on. Sarah, do you have a pick for us this week?
I do. Mine is the very chat client I'm actually using. I only realised just before the show that I'd found this really good, and I hadn't actually had it as a cool thingy, so I thought I would actually use it. It's called XChat from xchat.org. Really good client, pretty easy to install, set up. Obviously, as you guys, everyone knows, I set up this chat room with GeekShed. Very easy to use. And having this client, which I've run on both Linux and on Windows 7, and it works beautifully. I must admit, it does actually cost. But I was so impressed with it after the eval period of 30 days that I was quite happy to spend, I think it was around $20, but I can't remember exactly what it was. But it's, you can use it across several machines. There's no issue with that.
I've just did an apt get install and it installed.
Yeah, it installs for free to start with, but then after about 30 days, you get a message saying,
oh, really?
You have to pay for it.
Oh, I see.
But you just basically buy a license file and then you can use it wherever you want.
Very good.
You have to use it as yours, but it is really good. I mean, obviously, because I moderate the chat room, it's got all the useful things, and I've got loads of buttons here where I can actually do things I need to be able to do to make sure the chat room stays, you know, decent.
Excellent. Stuart in the chat room is apparently watching us on his new Samsung TV. I don't think that's IP because we got our application got rejected, but he says it's cool, like watching real telly. Very good. Very cool. Thank you, Stuart. Excellent.
Yes, that's really good.
James, why was that you in? Why was the app rejected?
There was some technical stuff about how the logo's rendered and stuff like that. But they've been all right about it. They're not being arsy. Oh, good. Chris is going back. He's having another go. We need to get him a new set of logos, though, for British. But the original app was not quite up to muster. So we'll suss it. It's one of those. I think it's very Apple-like in terms of, you know, it rendered and it worked very well on the device that I saw and the video that I saw of it. So the little test rig that we had to play with beforehand, it looked all fine and dandy. I've got no idea why they rejected it, because it did what they said on the tin, but obviously their tin's different from ours. So we're playing a bit of a best guessing game with them at the minute. It'll be fine. It'll be okay. Eric, we've spun it out long enough, mate. Tell us you haven't got a pick.
I do. I have one, actually.
Oh, you shook your head at the start of this. You've got it just recently.
I know. I've been. You see, I've been looking around on my desk to try to find something. I have one and a half things, actually. The second one I just thought of seconds ago. But the first one is sort of I don't really know what to do with it, but it seems like a cool idea. So I'm going to throw it out there. If any, you know, audience members have an idea for this or are using this, I'd love to hear from you. It's called clearbits.net. Clearbits, formerly known as LegalTorrents. And it's an interesting pricing model. It's for DRM-free content. So if you're a fan of that, if you're an advocate for that, you can sell your art and your wares through this service, and you can also find and purchase other people's things and not be encumbered by DRM. So it's kind of weird. Again, you sort of pay for hosting, but not the download. I only spent a few minutes on it, but I bookmarked it yesterday because I saw it linked from somewhere and looked interesting. So that's my first one, clearbits.net. Second one. Well, have you guys used that?
No.
No.
Okay. Yeah. If anyone out there is listening and has an idea for how to use that, let me know. Or if you're
is that the same as Pirate Bay?
No, it's different than Pirate Bay. Okay, second thing is Amazon's program called Send to Kindle. This is a new little freeware app that they came out with from Amazon for Mac and Windows. You know how I love to send documents, long articles, long things to read to my black and white Kindle because it's easier on the eyes and it's totally free to do that. I use the email method. I use also Tenderizer and I use Instapaper as a way to do it. But if you have a physical document on your hard drive, you can install this free app that just came out. You can drag and drop to send to your Kindle. You can print any application from which you can choose print. You can print to the Kindle, and you can also right click any file on Mac or Windows and say send to Kindle, and it will do that. So that is on Amazon.com/send to Kindle.
Excellent.
Oh, I like that.
Smart.
Very good. My pick is a photography application that's available in the Mac App Store. It's £13.99. So it's not cheap, but it's awesome. Now, you know how you've got all your photos, you take them with your 18 megapixel camera or 16 megapixel camera and you store them on your hard drive and they take up a ton of space. And actually some of them you want to keep and some of them you don't want to keep. Well, the ones that you think are rubbish, you'd like to shrink them, wouldn't you? And that'd be really cool. And the ones that you want to carry around on your iPad, because you've only got a limited amount of space, 64 gig. So you'd like those images to be as small as possible and shrunk down so that you can still do the skim. They still look great, but they're an awful lot more manageable in terms of file size on your iPad and not filling it up. This is the application for you. It takes your image as a JPEG and providing it's 17 megapixels or less, and it shrinks the file size to 1/5 of the file size. Okay, so that's going to be a huge saving on space on your device. And the thing is, the quality, I can hardly spot the difference.
And what does it do to the resolution?
It doesn't do anything to the resolution, really? Per se, because the image is as big as the other one in terms of physical size. But for some, I mean, this is the thing that's really impressive here is that JPEG is a compressed format already. It's taken the raw and it's super compressed. It's really way down there. And this thing extracts 4/5 of that yet again. There's two images here that if you're watching the video, you're maybe not going to get the full appreciation of it. But I mean, that is the full res image blown up to probably about 60%, and I've just clicked and changed over to the small one. And
funny photo, Ewan.
It's a picture of a rugby player. It's all. Don't make anything out of it.
He's a celebrated photographer, Mr. Rankin. You know,
it's just a picture of a rugby player, but you can't see. I am switching backwards and forwards between the two images.
Oh.
I have switched now between the two images. If you're watching video, about 10 times.
And the pasty white leg looks identical.
And the pasty white leg is a pasty. We got no sun over here. Piss off.
Yeah.
When have I got a bleep? There we go. But those two. Here's the mouse. Look. Here's the mouse. And I will move it over and you will hear it click.
Presumably, Ewan, it actually uncompresses the file before it saves it. If you said, okay, I want to look at it.
It does some kind of voodoo. That it does
That's the only explanation, isn't it?
I have no idea. I have no idea how they do it, but they take an already compressed format. And here's the thing: is if you make a zip file up of a JPEG and you say compress it, you'll get like 2 kilobits off it, something like the kilobytes off it. That's it. It does virtually nothing to compress it. This thing generates the two images you've just seen. The only difference between them, between image one and image two, is that image two is 1/5 of the file size of image one. And it's the same size resolution.
I miss it. Is it still a JPEG format?
Still a JPEG.
Wow.
It's an open very JPEG good. Format. It's not in a specialized format in any form. It's just a JPEG.
Oh, right. Okay.
Word of warning. A, $13.99, so it's not cheap. B, it overwrites your original file. So anything you shove into it, make sure you don't want it back at full res. It's very good. If you get right up close at sort of like 200%, you can see changes in the sharpness in it. But in terms of file compression, it is unbelievable. And if you've taken an image that you've already reduced and then shove it through, it comes back and it's like 10 kilobits, telebytes. And you're like, that can't be. And it's, this was a compressed image at 50 kilobytes, and now it's 10 kilobytes, and it looks identical. You cannot see any change whatsoever in really small images. It's an incredible, I've got no idea how they do it. It is magic. It is
Paul Daniels. You see, I reckon there's a number of websites that could well do with that technology, because they could absolute age to load, don't they?
I already use it. I take all the images that I've got from the rugby club shots that I've shot on the weekend, and I run them through a photo shrinker that I wrote in Automator. And when I get those files out, I run those through JPEG Mini. It overwrites them, and the files that go on the website are 5 and 10 kilobits, but they look just like the images that are 70 kilobytes. So they're huge. I got my bits and my bytes all wrong, I know. I thought you shot in RAW, says Mr. Walker. Don't start that one.
Are you world famous photographer Rankin, who teams up with the 2012 London Olympics?
Yeah, keep someone that tweeted
quiet,
that,
Eric.
But I'm
he
not
hasn't announced it yet.
I'm not allowed to say. And apparently,
I think it's actually the Rankin Miss P from Radio One.
I think actually that they someone tweeted out that I was. Did I ask them to shoot in RAW this week? But there we go. Where can we get a hold of you, Mr. Hart?
Same place as usual, SYZYGY, Syzygy, on Twitter.
Jimmy Boy Hart.
At Lord Reith.
And at Lord Reith on Twitter. I should go. I bet it's already gone.
Well, I don't know. Mr. Dean, where are you, sir?
I confess I'm a geek.com.
Excellent.
Another podcast tomorrow afternoon.
Good man. Thank you very much for coming along. Good to see you back again, mate. Ms. Gray, where can we get you?
On the Twitters at Sarah Jane UK is the best way.
And Eric, are you going to cock it up again this week?
Yeah, because now we know that Ewan's photographic pen name is just Rankin, so we can now search for his work. But you can search for my work at ericlanigan.com and twitter.com/EricLanigan, ericlanigan.
No.
You should just be known as Lanigan.
Yeah. You're starting to do that. Like, you know that you at the end of those adverts, where you hear them do the T's and C's. He's rolling it off so fast now, and he's so used to spelling it and saying it like that.
Well, it is his name.
Like this, couldn't he?
Call 555-7575.
That's nowhere near fast.
For your copy now.
In America, they literally really do compress it. I've heard
they do. They fast forward it.
There's some limit on the speed that they're actually allowed to do it. But in the US, it's just phenomenally fast.
There was a world record holder.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
Absolutely.
It's a real man.
We'll be back again next week to speak as fast as possible about technology and try and cover up the fact that we know no clue what we're talking about. Well, I will.
I don't.
Then about the rest.
Sorry, I've got a cough.
Why? What do you want to do?
Where's that cough button?
What do you want? What are you going to add in now?
No, sorry.
Swagger. Swagger talks over the bloody credits in Mac, and there aren't even any credits anymore. We've got the Bash, 6th of July. Don't be late. Do come. It's tons of fun. If you go to British Tech News, britishtechnetwork.eventbrite.co.uk, you can book a ticket. It's £20, but you're getting money back when you come here. We're only collecting money just so that we make sure you turn up. We've got quite a few more come this week, so that's pretty cool. And we're still working on having a special guest arrive. If you book after he's coming, then you won't get your money back, I'm afraid. Plain and simple. We'll be back again next week. We'll be here with the Mac Show and the Photo Show tomorrow. Please join us. See you again soon. Thanks for watching.